98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
The top stories of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show. We call it the 4 o'clock reset here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station, so you know where to go to get caught up on everything. We start with the Phoenix Suns, 130-117. They beat the Philadelphia 76ers, a game that was way too close for anybody's comfort for most of the contest. Late in the fourth quarter, they pull away. And even though Mikal Bridges had a really good game, 24, 3-5 from the three-point line, they got contributions off the bench from Saric and Kaminsky. For now, the third straight game, I believe, Devin Booker, 35 points in the bubble.
Yeah, missed the 35, man. He's automatic with that 35. They struggled. You know, DeAndre Ayton did not have a good game. Only 8 points, 4-10 shooting. Cam Johnson missed all four of his three-pointers. He was 3-10 from the field. He really struggled. So, you know, they needed to overcome, you know, a bad play. They got a little bit of a lift from Frank Kaminsky and Dario Saric off the bench. Those two guys had 31 off the bench, so they were good. A couple of big baskets late by Cameron Payne in that fourth quarter. They're able to pull out a win over Philly.
31 for Saric and Kaminsky combined. All told, the Suns got 41 bench points today, which was just a big, big deal for them. Here's what else is a big deal. The Suns are getting help. Boston is beating Memphis 88-77 with 10.5 minutes to go in that contest. Remember, for the Suns to pass Memphis, Memphis has to lose both of their remaining games. They've got Boston tonight. They've got the Bucks coming up on Thursday. And look at this. Dallas is beating Portland 28-21, 3.5 minutes to go in the first quarter there. If Portland loses,
the Suns are in control of their own destiny.
Indeed.
They win against Dallas, they are in the play-in game. But they would have to play a Dallas team that will be playing to win because they will have something on the line, and that's seeding.
Well, of course, we'll keep you updated on those scores and the situation for the Suns. But once again, a big win for them. Diamondbacks game two of their series against the Rockies tonight. Looking for a much better starting pitching performance from Zach Gallen. Robbie Ray got knocked around, couldn't get out of the fourth inning. The bullpen, except for Andrew Chafin, the bullpen performed very well, I thought, last night in covering for Robbie Ray, having to cover for five-plus innings in that game.
Yeah, especially Archie coming in, getting Matt Kemp with the bases loaded. I mean, that was a good performance. Archie's been good for them this year. He has. You know, Chafin has had his struggles, there's no doubt. But, you know, that bullpen had to go. Robbie only went 3 2/3, so that bullpen had to go 5 1/3 innings. They only gave up 2 runs in Colorado against that offense. They only gave up 2 runs in 5 1/3. The bullpen was a big reason why they won the game.
Meanwhile, sticking with Major League Baseball, Houston hitting coach and former Diamondback Alex Cintron has been suspended 20 games by Major League Baseball for the words that he said to Ramon Laureano when the A's played the Astros over the weekend. 20 games is a third of this season.
You don't say anything about somebody's mother.
And apparently, that's what Cintron
did. You
don't,
right? That was always fighting words, right? That back in the day, you say something about my mother, it's a fight. I mean, that's just, it always was something that leads to, and it still does, all these years later. Alex Cintron said something about Ramon Laureano's mother, and that led to him charging after.
Yeah. Hey, the bases. Leave the mothers out of this, all right?
That's good. That's good.
Well done, Jordan.
Yeah.
Well done. Laureano, for what it's worth, is appealing his suspension. Cintron, I believe, cannot appeal
as a coach, no.
Suspension. And am I the only one that when I hear Alex Cintron's name, I in my head, I have the Tom Brenneman voice that says it. Alex Cintron.
Cintron.
Cintron. I was sorry. That was just. Yeah. Top story of the day, though. And we've got two of them. It's obviously the Suns. But our other top story of the day was the shoe that dropped today at about, what time was it, 12, 15, 12 o'clock.
Well,
and then the Pac-12 followed up about 45 minutes later.
Sure.
The Big Ten and the Pac-12 in lockstep as we expected them to be, and in rapid fire succession as we expected, both announced that they were not going to be playing football in the fall. The Pac-12 went so far as to postpone all sports before January 1st.
Yeah, so that is so
everything.
That means that there will be no women's soccer, men's soccer. There will be no cross-country, no volleyball. It also means that Bobby Hurley's non-conference schedule at Creighton, going to Hawaii to play San Diego State, playing San Diego State here, that's gone. the non-conference schedule for Bobby Hurley's ASU men's basketball team, which was a good one, has now been wiped out. They would only play a conference schedule. So all of those, they were going to play at GCU, right? They were going to play at Grand Canyon.
Right.
That game is now knocked out.
Here's Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12, on it's just impossible to bubble student athletes, and that's the big thing here.
Student athletes, you know, are not, we cannot bubble our student athletes like pro sports can. We're part of broader campus communities. Student athletes are living with peer students on campus, interacting, and for the reasons that will be identified on here, you know, enough questions and concerns had been raised. That and answers we need, more time we need, that we didn't feel comfortable moving forward.
That was I wasn't in on the call today, but from everything I read about it from people who work Gambo, that was the main theme from Larry Scott in the Pac-12. We just don't know. We just don't know. We just don't have enough answers. We don't have enough data. We don't have enough information. Of course, there's a liability issue involved in this, and I'm sure that's probably what's driving this for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten.
But it's a lot of things that are driving it.
Sure.
I mean, there are. I mean, there's finances. You know, ASU benefited because they didn't have to pay for tests. That was a big benefit for ASU. They've got the Biodesign School on campus. So they were testing all ASU students and employees free of charge. So the athletes on campus had been tested multiple times. Over 1,000 tests ASU did. Most schools in the country don't have that luxury. So ASU was lucky that they had the ASU Biodesign School on campus. You know, one of the things that they really looked at, and I was told that this was a very serious concern, was new data about the effects on young people that have the virus and how it affects your cardiovascular system.
Yep.
Was a major concern. But here's the bottom line, and let's cut to the chase here. There's 130 programs in college football. 53 of them right now have canceled their season. 53 out of 130. We always viewed the Pac-12 as vulnerable because of the hotbeds, Arizona, Seattle, California. We always thought that the Pac-12 could be in more trouble because, I mean, how many universities did they have playing in California where the coronavirus is still really, you know, prevalent, and in here in Arizona? So that's why we were always kind of worried about the Pac-12. The Big Ten announced, and then the Pac-12 announced, and now, you know, you're looking at 53 college football programs have canceled their season.
Staggering number.
It is.
And I know if you're just a straight college football fan and you're upset about this today, it's understandable. And I think the two things that most college football fans are upset the most about, number one, with the same data available to them, the ACC is still a go. The SEC is still a go. The Big 12 is still a go. At least for now, they are. And so there are many wondering, why are those three a go and the Big 10 and the Pac-12 have decided to pull the plug on it with still a month to go for the season? The other one, and I don't have an answer for this, other than the liability issue, the other issue, if you're going to allow students back on campus, right, and you're going to open your doors to students, shouldn't you be – what? Why is the risk any different for them than it is for student athletes who are going to play football?
Well, Trevor Lawrence had a great comment earlier about, you know, you think these student athletes are safer without playing sports because then, you know, there's no environment that's controlled at all, and you know, they could go anywhere they want and do anything that they want, and that's one of the things, you know, in speaking to people at ASU, and it's just you had no control of the athletes when they leave. You know, you have them for a certain amount of time, but then right. They leave. I don't know what the right answer is. The Big 12 has a call tonight. There's a call with the Big 12 tonight. A high-ranking Big 12 official told Yahoo Sports there's an increasing sentiment that will play. If the Big 12 decides to play, then the SEC and the ACC are in. And now you will have the split. You'll have, you know, three major conferences playing in the fall, and you'll have two major conferences playing in the spring. I don't know if there's anything that could make the Big Ten or the Pac-12 go back on their decision. I wouldn't think that they would.
I wouldn't think they
but
would.
But they could end up having regrets if the other conferences are able to pull this off.
Here's more Larry Scott. This decision, in his opinion, was necessary.
This decision was made after consultation with athletics directors, our coaches, football working groups, and with the Pac-12 COVID-19 Medical Advisory Committee, who expressed concern with moving forward with contact practice. After reviewing all the data and considering the alternatives and having already delayed the start of our season and compressed our season. The CEO group was unanimous that this result, that this resultants decision was necessary.
That was Larry Scott. College football fans are upset. And I'm sad. It's awful. It's awful.
It's terrible.
It's just sad. I don't know if anger is the right word. I get it that some people are angry, and I'm not going to deny anybody that they could be angry about this. It's just a sad day. It's a sad day that here we are 4 months later, 5 months later, and when it comes to college football, these two conferences just decided for whatever reason, right or wrong, good or bad, liability, insurance, money, whatever it came down to, that they decided they just were not in a position to play. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, turn our attention back to the Phoenix Suns. They remain the only undefeated team inside the bubble. They beat Philly again today. They're 7-0. What did Monty Williams think about his team's performance today? You'll hear from the Suns head coach next on the Burns and Gambo show. 130-117. It was tight. It was uncomfortable. Philly didn't have any of their guys in there at all. No Embiid, no Simmons, no Richardson.
No starters.
No Harris. No, none of it. No Horford. None of those guys play today. And yet, as Monty Williams said, when you go into a game 6-0, there is a big target on your back, and they felt it today.
Everybody in the league can, you know, look at us and see that we've not lost here, and that puts a bit of a target on your back. And so we're getting great effort, and some of these teams were getting their best games, you know, and that's hard to play against. We're playing against teams for 48 minutes, and we've had to do it every night now for the past few games. So it wasn't always pretty, but the game's not always pretty.
It was not pretty. It was too tight of a game for basically throughout the entire duration. And then a little spurt about halfway through the fourth quarter gave the Suns just enough cushion to be able to pull this off. And in the middle of all of that was Mikal Bridges and, of course, who else? Devin Booker.
35 for Book, and he hit some big shots in that fourth quarter too, right? He was fantastic. He had, you know, an unbelievable dunk where he drove to the basket. He hit a big three-pointer. He got some help. Cameron Payne was good. But just overall, man, they made you sweat.
Yeah.
Like you would like to win that game going. They have had a hard time putting teams away. They have. They've had a hard time putting teams away in this bubble. And it shouldn't have been that way. But the thing is, yes, Philly's got guys that play hard. They're not as talented. They're backups for a reason. You got to take care of that team early. They waited a long time. Now, they played yesterday. They had a back-to-back. They played Oklahoma City. That could have been part of it. But you see what happens when they don't have everybody clicking, right? Cam Johnson wasn't hitting any threes. He wasn't hitting any shots. DeAndre looked like he was sleepwalking through half the game,
Yeah. Maybe
more. When you don't have – the Suns aren't talented enough to overcome two players playing poorly. They're just not.
No, they're not. I'm looking at the fourth quarter box score, just the fourth quarter. The Phoenix Suns shot 65% from the fourth quarter in that game. Mikal Bridges had 8. Devin Booker had 11 points in the fourth quarter alone in that game. Cameron Payne and Dario Saric combined for 9 points in the fourth quarter. The Suns were 65% in the fourth quarter, 3 of 5 from the three-point line in the fourth quarter to pull away, which is why Monty said, we made plays when we needed to make plays.
We found a way to get stops when we needed to. They shot a great percentage from 3, so that's something that, you know, not too happy about. But and we only got 21 free throws, but we had great effort, and we made plays when we needed to.
And Devin Booker, like, you know, he took 10 shots in the fourth quarter. He made 5 of them. He had 11 points in the fourth quarter. I don't think he got any rest in the second half. I'll have to go back and look at his minutes played. I don't think he got a blow at all in the entire second half.
Did he end up playing 40? I think he might have played 40 minutes in that game.
He played 41
minutes.
Up.
Wow.
On the second night of a back-to-back for Devin Booker, after scoring 35 yesterday. Now, you know, he was able to take the fourth quarter off yesterday because of the blowout against Oklahoma City. So you factor that in a little bit. But still, after playing 27 minutes yesterday in the blowout win against Oklahoma City on the second night of a back-to-back, I'm looking at the second half box score for the Phoenix Suns, and I don't know if Devin Booker came out at all in the second half. He played all but 1 minute and 20 seconds of the second half. Impressive. So impressive for Devin.
You know, they have a better winning percentage than 13 teams in the NBA right now.
The Suns?
I just looked this up because I'm curious what a seven-game winning streak. They have a better winning percentage. Follow me here. San Antonio, New Orleans, Sacramento, Minnesota, Golden State. That's five. Cleveland, Atlanta, Detroit, New York, Chicago, Charlotte, Washington, Orlando. That's eight. They have a better winning percentage than 13 teams in the NBA.
Yeah. More Monty Williams today. The contributions they got from the bench, we talked about it a second ago, but they were obviously huge today.
We got a number of guys perform tonight. Dario's minutes off the bench was huge for us. You know, Frank had some shots go down, but Dario's play, he's just been a bit of a an X factor for us, scoring and his effort. The one time when he dove for the loose ball, I thought that was a signature play for our team. So I'm happy with the win. You're not always happy with how things work out from an execution standpoint, but we've done what we needed to do to get wins.
18 for Saric in the game.
He's been good.
He's been really good.
Yeah, he's been good.
I know you especially have brought up over the last couple of days, you know, how much stock do you put into how a guy plays over seven games compared to how he plays over 60. But, man,
sure.
Dario's been so good in these seven games. Like a different version of Dario. And I don't know what the cost is going to be like to bring him back. I don't know if he's pricing himself out of coming back to the Suns. But him anchoring the second unit, I like how that looks a lot for the Phoenix Suns. And I know it's a small sample size. And you know I don't normally like small sample sizes. But, man, he's looked really good anchoring that second unit for them in this bubble.
I'm going to try and find out. I'm going to hit a couple of NBA execs right now to find out what Saric is worth. Because, yes, he's done a good job for them. He's been a good player coming off that bench. He's found a little bit of a niche and a role. But if you go back and we look when this is all over, I mean, how many times did they play teams that weren't playing hard? How many times did they play teams that were resting guys and sitting guys? And that's the hard part, right? You know, you don't want to get overly excited about this and judge this team just on what they did in the bubble, because there were 62 games this season that you have to look at as well.
Yeah, I mean, the last two for sure, right? I mean, the last three for sure. I mean, the Heat didn't play Dragic or Butler or none. Of course, the last two, Oklahoma City, they rested everybody. Philly rested everybody. The Clippers, I mean, they were missing guys because of the bubble.
Montrezl Harrell.
But they were playing Kawhi and Paul George. Both of those guys were draped all over Book when he hit the game-winning shot.
Yep.
Porzingis and Doncic combined for 70 against the Suns in the win over Dallas.
Yeah, the Dallas game and the Clipper games, good wins,
yes,
right?
Yes, good wins against teams that I would
say
were
trying.
They opened
up with a win against Washington.
Right. Right, who they were missing guys because of their set of circumstances. Monty, the 7-0 Suns, longest win streak in 10 years, by the way, for the Suns. A seven-game win streak.
Wow.
They've put themselves in a good spot for Thursday.
I mean, we can finally look at it. You know, it's our next step. And so we know that we're not totally in control of our fate, but we put ourselves in a good position. And you know, nobody would have guessed the Phoenix Suns would be in this position before all of this started. And our guys have just battled and executed and made the plays necessary to give us a chance. And so I'm always in the mindset of the next right thing. And for us, it's going to be, you know, how we approach tomorrow, whether it's film or rest and recovery. But we do have it, you know, in our sights.
Here's the sitch. The Boston Celtics are probably going to beat Memphis 115-99 with 3.5 minutes to go.
Yep.
So you're getting help there.
You need one loss in three games and the Suns win.
Yes.
Suns have to win, and they need either Portland to lose one of two games or Memphis to lose the one game they have left.
That's exactly it.
That's it. Simple.
And if that happens, you pass at least one of those teams. If Memphis and Portland loses, and you win, you're the eighth seed.
Yes, which would be crazy because then somebody's got to beat you twice.
You're the eighth seed. I mean, if now that would require Portland going, you know, losing one of these games and Memphis losing out. But with Memphis down 17 with three to go. Now, the next game for Memphis is on Thursday.
Against Milwaukee.
And I have no idea who they're going
to
play.
No, I mean, probably not anybody. They got no reason to, you know, they've lost two games in a row. I mean, the Bucks, maybe, you know, maybe they play some of their guys a little bit, but they've lost to the Raptors. They lost to the Mavericks. Before that, they lost to the Nets and the Rockets. They've lost four out of five in this bubble.
So to pass Memphis, Suns need to win. Memphis needs to lose their final game. To pass Portland, Portland needs to lose one of their two final games. They've got Dallas right now, and they're winning. Portland is 46-39. And then they've got the Brooklyn Nets on Thursday. You need Portland to lose one of those two games. And the debate that we continue to have is quite simply this. Dallas, if they were to beat Portland today, would do the Suns a short-term favor, but in the long term, it would give Dallas everything to play for when they play the Suns on Thursday.
Because they could avoid the Clippers.
Because if they were to beat the Suns on Thursday and the Jazz were to lose to the Spurs on Thursday, now it's the Mavs who are the sixth seed and it's Utah who's the seventh seed, and the Mavs would avoid the Clippers in the first round of the playoffs. So,
well, and the Jazz, see, and you don't know what the Jazz are going to do, but you know that if you win that game and the Jazz lose, then you get the spot, right? Because you're not going to know. The Jazz game isn't earlier than their game, right?
I don't think so, no. I think the Jazz game is later than the Dallas Suns game.
Right.
So you might have to play hard no matter what, seeing if – but then the Spurs might not have anything to play for if the Suns end up winning, because the Suns will have basically taken their spot depending on what happens with Portland and depending on what happens with Memphis. I mean, the Spurs are hanging on by a thread right now at this point.
Listen, most people agree that you want Dallas to beat Portland, and
yep,
then you have your control of your own destiny, and then it's all on the line. You and the Mavericks, if you win, you're in. It would be a crushing loss if they came that close and then lost in the last game. It would be crushing. People wouldn't sleep that night. It would be such a crushing loss.
The Pac-12 and the Big Ten punting on their football season to the spring based off of the medical advice they've received. Why is the SEC and the ACC getting different advice? Or is it the same advice and they're just reacting to it differently? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Crazy day in sports. Let's head back to the Auction Community Studios where Sarah Cazell is standing by. She's got an update on our Twitter poll question of the day.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
So, as we're about to have a college football conversation, it's a college football question for our Twitter poll question of the day. What do you have for us, Sarah?
Yes, we actually have two poll questions. I added that Sun scenario one.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Right, yes.
I put a question up there on that. Okay.
If we have time. Are you trying to steal my job, Gambo?
No, but I didn't know if you were going to add the poll question. So
yeah,
I actually
it's
said,
up there.
What would you rather have?
Okay. Well, we can read your responses as well if we have time. But the college football question that you referred to, Bernsey, as I just said in the update, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten both said there will not be any football or any fall sports this fall. Hopefully, that can all be played in the spring. So now looking to the rest of the Power Five conferences, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, what do you think those three conferences will do? Here are the three options. All three will play football this fall. All three will not play football this fall. Or one or two of them will cancel the fall season, but not all three of them.
All three won't play. I think that's where it's headed.
I'm leaning that way too. Although I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah, right?
I'm guessing. I'm not asking anybody to go make a wager based off of what I'm saying or you're saying. It's a guess. I don't know. That's my guess. What's our audience say?
55% of our voters are with you two. They think all three of those conferences will not play football this fall. 23% think maybe one or two of them will cancel and one or two will play. 22% say all three will play this fall.
All right, the second question is based off of this premise. If Portland loses this game against Dallas, that opens the window for the Suns to control their destiny and get in with a win over Dallas on Thursday. But if Dallas wins this game, then they are in a position where they have a lot to play for against the Suns on Thursday, because they could catch Utah for the sixth seed and avoid the Clippers in the first round of the playoffs. So with that on the line, you're asking who we're rooting for, Portland or Dallas in this game?
That's right.
All right. What's our audience say?
90%.
Yeah.
are rooting for Dallas.
Listen, I get it because you control your own destiny. Yeah, I'm not saying I don't get it. I'm just saying be careful what you wish for, because a Dallas team with Luka and Porzingis, they're talented, they're good. If they've got something to play for, they might take it to you. Where if they don't have anybody to play, if they sit everybody, well, then, you know, you have a better chance of winning that game, clearly, but then you would still need help. You would need Portland or Memphis to lose a game.
Yeah, I just think it's the simplicity of controlling your destiny and knowing that everything's in front of you. And, yeah, Dallas is going to give you a tough matchup if they've got a lot to play for, obviously. Man, the Suns are going to be so motivated in that game if it comes to that.
They'll be more motivated than Dallas because Dallas is already in. You know you're in.
Sure.
You're just playing for seeding. But if you're the Suns, man, everything on the line in that game. Yeah. I mean, everything.
The college football story, now all eyes turn towards the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12. What will they do now that the Big 10 and the Pac-12, as expected, have pulled the plug on their fall sports seasons?
There's a Big 12 call tonight, and there's a lot of people speculating that, like, they're in. You know, and then, you know, sources tell Pat Forty that the Big 12, the linchpin in today's events, is very much split on a decision. A small group wants to cancel. A small group wants to play. A larger group wants to delay. AD meets today, and then AD and presidents meet jointly around 6 Eastern. So that should be today. Like, that should be going on right now. I don't know. We know the Pac-12 canceled. We know the Big Ten canceled. If the Big 12 decides that they're out, I mean, does that make the other two say, okay, forget it?
We had John Wilner on earlier, and he said he thinks that's exactly what's going to happen.
That right.
Two won't go it alone. Three, maybe, but two won't do it. Look, everybody's got the same medical information in front of them. Some are just interpreting it differently or with more seriousness.
But you said that right. You said that.
They're just interpreting it differently and giving it more weight. The Pac-12 and the Big Ten looked at it and said, nope, don't want to take the risk. Absolutely not. It's not worth it. The other conferences so far are saying it is worth the risk. And here's Oregon State's medical AD, Doug Aukerman, who was asked the question during the webinar today. Why do you think other conferences think it's safe to play in the fall?
Each of the Power Five conference medical groups did interact once a week for the last couple of months on a working group. And so there has been some discussion about the issues and concerns. But, you know, I can't speak as to how they're going to deliberate and come to their final conclusions or thought processes. What I can say is that that our infectious disease and public health doctors and sports cardiologist consultants, as well as our physicians, have really taken a lot of time and effort in this thought process. We all would love to see sports as much as anyone else, but we want to see it done in a very safe manner.
The ACC, Gambo, is relying on a doctor from Duke to provide their leadership when it comes to this. He is the top ACC medical advisor. He is an infectious disease specialist who's also chairs the ACC's medical advisory team. He's a
and
Duke
said
doctor.
It's safe to play.
Said it's safe to play.
He believes that it's safe to play.
We want
to look at more stuff, but believe it's safe to play.
We believe we can mitigate it down to a level that makes everyone safe. Can we safely have two teams meet on the field? I would say yes. What he said, and this is why I said everyone's interpreting the data differently. What Dr. Wolf said is, I cannot predict risk tolerance among administrators, athletes, and fans. He said there must be some acceptance of risk, just as there is when players walk onto the field under normal circumstances. There is no thing as zero risk when a football player walks onto a football field to play a violent game. There's risk involved, and he said it's about risk tolerance, and thereby kind of implying that the ACC has more tolerance for risk than the Pac-12 and the Big. Now, whether they feel that way 2 weeks from now, whether the SEC feels that way 3 weeks from now, I don't know. I happen to think they're all going to crumble to the same pressures from the lawyers and from the medical experts who are saying, man, you guys got to understand the liability issues here are crazy. And if you play, if you go through with this, there's studies out there that show that we're all liable and we're all going to be paying through the nose for this, and it's our advice that you not do it. I happen to believe that's ultimately what's going to happen. But if those three conferences decide it's worth the risk to do it anyway.
But there's, listen, forward. Here's the reality. There's a virus in the country, and there's a risk with everything we do.
Yes.
But, you know, one of my gyms opened back up today, the Pit, right? They opened back up. So there is a risk to everything, but it's just, you know, it's the level of risk.
Yeah.
You know, like you could say we're going to open up, and I'm sure liability is an issue. Do the players want to play? Do the players not want to play? Do the parents want their kids to play? I mean, that could be a factor, too, with these with freshmen coming in. I don't know. Look, I hope that they play. I want them to play. I don't think that they should push it to the spring. That's my opinion. But I also understand, like, there is a risk to everything. My kid just went to V's Barbershop to get a haircut. Was there a risk with him going to the barbershop to get a haircut? Yeah, there was probably a risk with him going to the barbershop to get a haircut. But you know what? He went to the barbershop and he got a haircut.
Right.
Okay, if the school's open, guess what? My kids are going. That's my decision. Okay, my kids will go to school if school's open. If they could go, my kid will go. So, like, everybody has to deal. You're right. Everybody has to deal with their own risk tolerance.
Sure, but the difference is, you know, your kid goes somewhere. You're probably not suing that place if he gets COVID-19. You're probably not holding that place liable if your kid gets COVID-19.
Right.
Whereas if Alabama makes their kids play football this year and somebody does get it and it gets serious years from now, now you've opened the door.
Do they have to make it? But what if they say, listen, you have the right to opt out if you want?
Well, I believe they do have that right.
Okay, so you're not forcing anybody to play? You don't have to play if you don't want to.
No,
well,
no.
Honor your scholarship. You don't have to play and there'll be a spot for you next year.
Yep.
Okay,
but
deal.
Then somebody might say, "Eh, we still felt the pressure. We felt like we had to."
But then that's on you.
Look, I don't know the answers to this. I'm just telling you what I think is going to happen. You know, and I tell you what I think is going to happen. I think ultimately the same issues that exist for the Big Ten and the Pac-12 exist for all of these Power Five. What did you say, 53?
53.
Of the 130.
30? I believe it was 130.
FBS programs have decided to nuke fall. I mean, at some point there's strength in numbers and the others are going to follow suit. To not leave themselves open for the risk. Right, wrong, good, bad, again. I'm just – today just makes me sad. Makes me sad that it's come to this, but that's where it's at. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Diamondbacks had their bats come alive last night in the win over Colorado. Was that a sign that the team is breaking out of the funk, or is it just Coors Field? That's coming up next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball is 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. We're checking in on the Diamondbacks as they warm up for the game's first pitch. D-backs on deck. Brought to you by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Try the toasted s'more shake only for a limited time at Sonic. And by 72 Sold. Sell your home in 72 hours and net thousands more.
Diamondbacks baseball coming up tonight on ESPN 620, game two of their three-game series against the Colorado Rockies. We'll get to the matchup in just a bit. Let's talk about a little what happened last night and some of the things Troy Lovello told us earlier today about the state of the baseball team. Another shaky performance from Robbie Ray, not able to get particularly deep in the game. But I thought the bullpen really picked him up, and credit to the offense. Man, they had 24 at-bats last night with a runner in scoring position. They came through on 8 of them. And Cole Calhoun not only led off the game with the home run, but that big 2-run double late in the game.
Huge.
Gave him some good cushion in that game. Made everything feel a whole lot better.
Yeah, but they have 18 hits in the game. I mean, it knocked out Gray, and then they keep scoring runs. And in Colorado, right, no lead safe. So they were able to add some tack-on runs. I think it was 3 in the 7th. That was really big. Nice to see Peralta get the 4 hits and Marte get the 4 hits. And just, you know, to try to get some guys, you know, back up to decent batting average and start hitting a little bit. And, you know, Gray was pitching well. So that's a good win against Colorado, because Colorado, they're 11-5 right now. They're off to a great start.
Off to a great start. The offense was rolling last night. Here's Troy Lovello with us earlier for his weekly visit here on the Burns and Gambo show.
It was the leadoff home run by Cole that really got us pushing in the right direction. But overall, I thought it was the entire approach and the linked at-bats that we had. It was 9 guys really committed to how they were getting pitched and counterpunching. Really, that's what it is when you're up at the plate. Sometimes you got to counterpunch in order to land that power punch. And we took what Gray gave us. He never gave in, but you could see it yielded a number of base hits, some really good approaches, and a lot of runs. And the bottom line is we won the game.
Do you think he uses the boxing metaphors just for you?
I think so.
You think he,
counter-punching to land the power punch.
He talks with other people. I wonder if he drops the boxing
metaphors.
Sure. I mean, that's just a gamble.
Yeah, I was much more of a counter-puncher than everything else. I would always wait and let the other guy throw the punch, and then I would counter off of that. So, love the counter-punchers.
I was very impressed with the work of the bullpen last night. Robbie Ray couldn't get out of the fourth inning. Ginkle, Young, Rondon, who got to a really rough start, pitched well last night for his inning. Guerra.
Your boy did not pitch well.
Andrew Chafin is becoming, Vinny said this earlier, he's the bullpen's version of Jake Lamb. It's kind of getting to the point where you just, why? Why? What? Why high leverage situations? Why moments like I mean,
I get it all the time. Why is Andrew Chafin in the game? Well, why is Jake Lamb playing? You're right. He is the pitching version, right? He's been a really good diamond. I've thought he's been a really good diamondback for his career. I haven't been down on Andrew Chafin as others like you have. But obviously he was terrible again last night, and he's not pitched well this year.
No, I mean, to have to go to Bradley in a game like that where he had a 5-run lead in the bottom of the ninth inning, you don't want your closer to pitch in a moment like that, and yet you load the bases on 3 straight hits. You bring in Archie Bradley to face Matt Kemp, of all people.
Who burned him twice with the Dodgers and really ruined his confidence.
And Bradley got him to ground in the double play. You gave up a run, but so what? You don't care. You got 2 outs in the inning and then a strikeout. Bradley gets the save on his birthday, the 4th of Bradley's season. He's got a 1.59 ERA. Now, tonight's matchup, and you understand it's Coors Field, and you understand what you're going into, but you feel better about this one because of who the Arizona Diamondbacks have on the hill. And with that in mind, time for the pitching matchup, brought to you by Berg Simpson. When the game is on the line and you've been injured, nobody matches up to Berg Simpson. Visit BergSimpson.com, BURG Simpson.com. The closest thing the Diamondbacks have to an ace, Zach Gallen on the bump today.
Yeah, I would make the argument Merrill Kelly has looked really good too, and could be a co-ace because both of those guys has pitched well. Gallen's faced Colorado twice in his career. Both times were last year. He's got a 2.70 ERA. 1 start at Coors Field. He gave up 9 hits and 2 runs in 4 innings. So, Coors Field, a tough place to pitch. But Zach Gallen has been absolutely sensational ever since they got him. And you love giving him the ball every fifth day. And this is a game where you feel, hey, with him on the mound, you got a real good chance to win.
Yeah, absolutely. For the Colorado Rockies, they will send
Kyle Freeland
to the hill, the lefty, 2-0 with a 2.41 ERA so far on the season.
Yeah, back to pitching like he was when he was a Cy Young candidate back in 2018. Last year, he was awful last year. He couldn't get anybody out. But 2 years ago, he was sensational. He was a Cy Young candidate. He had a great year. This year, he looks like he is back to being, a great pitcher again.
As far as the starters for the Diamondbacks, the guys that we have questions about, Robbie Ray didn't get very deep into that game last night. Torrey Lovello acknowledged that maybe Ray looked good in summer camp because he was facing Arizona's offense.
I don't know. I kind of walked myself into that one. You're right. I mean, it is what it is. Offensively, for the first 8-10 games of the season, we were subpar, and I feel like we're coming out of that on the other side. But what I did see at the start of summer camp, our offense was unbelievable, and I thought, wow, this is going to be a really, really healthy offensive year. So, maybe it coincided with that time of the summer camp when we were walking out of it and going to play the Dodgers that we started to get that cold streak, and Robbie kind of overmatched us because we were in a cold spell. But I was just evaluating the stuff, and he shut us down. Yes, I think he would have shut anybody down because the stuff was coming out real hot and he was landing all 3 of his pitches.
Look, I asked a question a couple days ago, and you said you now believe that all of this tinkering Robbie Ray did to his mechanics, it was him. It was not them. It was what he wanted.
It was what he wanted,
they wanted, which is kind of what I thought. But I'm glad to hear you say that that's what you think is happening.
They talked on a broadcast about a glove tap. The glove tap's not a big deal. A lot of guys do that. It's the short arm path. He decided to go with a short arm path because he wanted better command of his pitchers. But what it's done to me is it's taken away his deception and not hiding the ball as well. And he's not striding to the plate with the short arm path the way he usually did. So, I think he's releasing the ball a little bit shorter than normal. But the main thing to me is that, that fastball just has no life on it. There's a difference between, velocity and life. He's just got no life on the fastball. It's very flat when the hitters are they're hitting a flat fastball. So I think it's been a detriment. I think it's really hurt him. I don't know if he could switch back or if it's too late. He decided that this is what he needed to do to get that big contract in a free agent year, and so far it has backfired on him.
Yeah, as far as Madison Bumgarner's spot in the rotation, he's on the injured list now, and Torrey says we still haven't decided who's going to take his spot just yet.
We haven't made a decision yet because, you know, if you look at the Rockies lineup today, you know, one of the guys that we're considering, there's a wall of lefties, and we may need him to help us win a baseball game today, and that's really what our focus is right now. So we have three candidates. I think everybody will understand who they are at this point that we're strongly considering. But all options are still open. We haven't quite drilled down to it because of what our need might be today. We miss Bum. We're definitely thinking about him. We need him to get healthy. He's going to take care of his business. But somebody's going to need to step into that role. We're going to make sure it's the right guy that's going to be able to execute a game plan and help us win a baseball game.
The crazy thing to me about all of this, despite everything wrong for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I know some of this is a function of the schedule, and I know some of this is a function of the expanded playoffs, they're a game out of a playoff spot with 43 games to play.
Yeah. I mean, once they opened it up to the eight teams, you felt like, what did I say? Just don't be ninth.
Yeah.
Just don't be ninth. You know, as bad as they are, you're going to hang around because there's just no way that there's not eight great baseball teams in the NL. There's three probably really good teams, and then you'll have a bunch of mediocre teams all battling, you know, to get into a playoff spot. You're going to see teams with 500 records or below battling right down to the wire with these games.
Yeah. It is time now for the keys to today's game, and they are brought to you by Sands Chevrolet, your home team for no payments until 2021 on select models. Head to sandschevrolet.com for details.
The Diamondbacks are 3-0, and Zach Allen starts. He is the key to the game. They have won every game he has pitched in. Despite that, he does not have a win. He is winless. He does not have a win to his record. Pitched great the last two outings against the Dodgers and the Astros, two of the best teams in baseball. He pitched really, really well. So the key is just Zach Allen, his ability to keep the Colorado Rockies down, and especially Charlie Blackmon. Man, he's hitting almost 500. That'll be the key to Arizona's win.
All right, that game, 5:40 this evening. You'll hear it on ESPN 620. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Phoenix Suns, their first seven-game win streak in 10 years. And now we are 24 minutes away from knowing if the Suns are going to control their destiny or if they still need some help. We'll get you caught up on the very latest NBA scenarios and what it means for the Suns next on the Burns and Gambo Show.